Angie, are you there?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
There you are, Angie. Nice to hear your voice. Thanks for joining us today from PolitiFact. I was just looking at some messages on Facebook, and I saw a group of people I know all chatting about the 28th Amendment, which isn't a brand new post, right? That's been going around for a while, right?
You know, we've seen a lot of different claims about the 28th Amendment because the truth is there is no 28th Amendment, not yet at least.
Yeah. I thought, wait a minute, I know the 25th, and I know I don't know the Constitution that well, but I looked and there are people that want a 28th Amendment to pass, and then they've got the points in there. So at least there's chatter about a potential one, right?
Yeah. The one that we have been fact-checking most recently is, does the 28th Amendment prohibits Congress from creating laws that apply to U.S. citizens, but not to them, and vice versa. And that is that's not true. That's an internet hoax. But we see versions of a 28th Amendment popping up from time to time where people say that Congress is violating the 28th Amendment. And it's we have to put it in the category of pure hoax because we have 27 amendments to the Constitution, not 28.
So if people think that Donald Trump has been a little heavy-handed, maybe Republicans were doing his bidding, lo and behold, the 28th Amendment got snuck in the door, you didn't even notice. But the process to an amendment to the Constitution is arduous and difficult to do. You can't sneak an amendment in, can you?
No, you can't. You need Congress to act, so you need the House and the Senate to agree to an amendment by a two-thirds vote. Quite a lot of votes these days. And then on top of that, you need state legislatures to ratify it. You need about three-fourths of the state legislatures.
38, yeah.
So there's no way this is going to be a secret process or an under-the-radar process. You can't do it. President can't do it by executive order. It's not going to be sneaked in, I'm afraid.
But as I was reading some of the bullet points about this 28th Amendment, I thought, well, maybe there should be a 28th Amendment to right these wrongs. So let's at least see if the premise is correct. Members of Congress retire at full pay after only one term. The amendment should change that and would change that. Is it true? Do members of Congress retire at full pay after only one term?
No, that is completely false. And we have fact-checked that many times over the years. It seems to be a hoax that won't die. When we look into it, now, what happens is, just to take people through kind of the boring nuts and bolts, members of Congress are treated like federal employees, and they accrue retirement as they serve. So let's say you have a member who is elected at a young age, serves a long time. They will get a nice pension when they're done. But it is capped, no matter how long you serve, it's capped at 80% of the salary, and nobody gets it just for serving it one term. That's the one we see. They say you get one term, and then you get it for life. Not true at all. Totally not true. Contradicted by the law and statute and publicly available information.
I guess one of the posts that you all, I mean, there's been, like you said, many versions of this, but one of them said that it's five terms before they would cash in on any retirement. So they would have to be there 10 years before they got retirement. Is that right?
They start now. I mean, now you're getting into some areas where I have to go and look it up. I think they need to be there 5 years before they get retirement, but I need to double check that. Don't quote me on it. They accrue it like any other federal employee. And then when you talk about terms, are you talking about the Congress?
Yeah.
Are you talking about the Senate? Because five terms as a House of In the House of Representatives, that's 10 years. Five terms in the Senate is 30 years. So you're talking about three times as much service if they're a senator.
The same reason that we need a 28th Amendment, this widely circulated post says, is because members of Congress don't have to pay, and their staffs don't either, don't have to pay back their student loans.
That is not true. There is nothing about congressional service that says they don't have to pay back their student loans. Now, in recent years, there have been measures to do student loan forgiveness for people who were in public service jobs.
Right. Oh, sure. I'm familiar with that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been controversial because it hasn't always been administered properly.
Understood.
But there is no law or regulation that exempts Congress from student loans.
Okay, so if you're a member of Congress, you are in the public sector, but so too as a firefighter, a school teacher, a doctor that works at a public hospital. All of those people are eligible for student loan forgiveness. It's a pet topic of this show. We're familiar with that. So members of Congress are as eligible for that as those people are. But that requires 10 or 20 years of service. And there's a formula. They would be no different than anybody else. It says here also that they are exempt from the fear of prosecution for sexual harassment. Is it true that a member, I'm just reading these, is it true that a member of Congress cannot be prosecuted for sexual harassment?
Now, there's some interesting things about that. That gets a little tricky. And I would want to do some more research on that point. We haven't checked that. In the past, there were a lot of complaints that Congress was not subject to some of the same laws around sexual harassment. Another one was insider trading. And Congress has been grappling with these laws to try and make these things apply to them. So it depends on that one. I would want to do more research before I said more about it.
It's funny because a member of Congress was on with us a few months ago, and he said that the opportunities for members of Congress to profit from knowledge they gain buying and selling stocks or, you know, moving money around because of stuff they're aware of. I said I thought that they had to put their money in a blind trust. The president did. And he said, no, the president does not have to put his money in a blind trust, but we should make that the law. I don't know if that has to be a constitutional amendment, but that should surely be a law, and it is not. What else are you seeing relative to the storming of the Capitol a couple of weeks ago? What myths have you all been sort of popping out there?
Well, by far the most popular one that we fact-checked in several different versions is that Antifa was behind it, which is not true. We don't see anything that suggests some sort of left-wing false flag was actually behind that. I mean, you know, I think that's a fantasy by people who are sympathetic to President Trump and his arguments, who are trying to put off responsibility for what happened. But every time we've dug into the case of someone who is supposedly Antifa, either they're clearly a Trump supporter, clearly a QAnon supporter, or there's one case of a guy named John Sullivan that probably people have heard about, who seems to have just had this broad-based activist career where he likes being in the center of attention. But there's not a lot of evidence that, number one, he was the member of Antifa, or number two, coordinated the overall protest in any meaningful way. So all of these versions that Antifa started the riots are false. And some Republicans are even saying so. You might recall last week, Kevin McCarthy, the House leader of the Republicans, said this is not the case.
Yeah, I would like to hear more politicians of every stripe just make it a point to be proactive about that, because the amount of information out there, misinformation out there, is unsettling. The number of Republicans, people who describe themselves as Republicans who do not believe that Joe Biden is a legitimate president, is over 40%. And I'm sorry to hear that, because that's in conflict with my personal beliefs. I think that's in conflict with the facts.
Yeah, we've looked at election rigging claims, and there's no evidence. There's no evidence that there was widespread fraud. It's just like, not true. Every time we dig into it, the election officials are saying, like, no, we counted it. We got all the votes in. We counted them in our normal way. Sometimes it took them a little more time because in some states they had to open envelopes of all these absentee ballots. But every time we looked at it, it looks like Joe Biden was the legitimate winner of the election. It's not even all that close. It's about the same margin that Trump beat Clinton by when you look at the Electoral College and how things shook out in the state. And these repeated claims that, like, you know, oh, dead people voted. Okay, well, look, maybe a couple of people voted who weren't supposed to, broke the rules. but not the thousands that you would need. I mean, even in the states that were pretty close, Joe Biden would win by like 10,000 votes, 20,000 votes. Well, you're not going to overturn those results with just a handful of people who broke the rules.
PolitiFact's editor-in-chief is Angie Holin. Yeah, I remember the phone call that the president had with the Secretary of State, his team and the Secretary of State's team in Georgia. And they said, what about the thousands of dead people that voted? And they said, Mr. President, there were two. We looked, two. That's two too many, but it was two. Okay.
Yeah.
C'est la vie. Angie Holin, editor-in-chief, PolitiFact. Nice to talk to you, Angie. Keep doing what you folks do.
Nice
I appreciate your time
you.
Today. Stay
Thanks.
Well.